Ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Terrence Malagone. Our guest this week is a familiar one. It's John Oran, the sports media writer for Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal. And we're going to do about 35 minutes or so, just around the horn, what is current on some sports media topics. John, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Richard. Always happy to come on.
Yeah, John, you've been doing a lot of other podcasts, my competition, so it's great to have you back. And apparently you've I worked with your agent, and I was able to get you back on, so it's exciting for me.
Half podcast, will travel. Open for business.
No doubt. All right, so let's talk about NFL viewership. Last year's viewership, John, regular season, was up roughly 5% from the year prior, and they gained back some of the viewership losses, obviously, that they had. The specific numbers, if I'm looking at my notes here, and this is from the NFL, and we'll sort of take them at their word in terms of, like, defined numbers. NFL games averaged 15.76 million across CBS, ESPN, Fox, NBC, and the NFL Network in 2018, up from 14.96 million in 2017, but still down from 16.5 million 2 years ago. So that's sort of like the jumping off point, John, to this little conversation. What do you expect this year? And there's going to be a lot of variables and stuff, but if you had to sort of, if you had to take your best crystal ball, NFL ratings up, down, or neutral this year?
I'm going to say that they're going to be up, and for a couple of reasons. It's all been trending up. The NFL draft was up. You know, what they've been doing at the combine has been up, and they're just these storylines right now that I think are really resonating, particularly, like, you know, in Cleveland is a big hot team. Chicago is a market where the team is expected to do well. And I just think that there's been a lot of interest, and they're pretty good storylines that suggest that the networks are going to be pretty happy this season.
Before we get into some of those storylines, John, do you consider the exhibition season any kind of marker for what might be coming in the regular season?
Oh, yeah, completely. I completely do. I think that, you know, that's all part of the fan interest that sort of builds up into it. So that these exhibition games, it's easy to dismiss because they mean nothing, but they still rate higher than any regular season game in any other sport. I mean, so it still draws a lot of people, and that, to me, shows the interest in it.
Yeah, it's amazing, John. I think it was Sports Media Watch who put out, like, a stat about last year's Hall of Fame game beating, like, you know, essentially like 226 or so out of like 245 sporting events of the year. That's like something like that just shows you just the ultimate dominance of the NFL when it comes to viewership.
Yeah, I mean, everybody laughs at the NFL Pro Bowl. And even the NFL takes a look at the Pro Bowl and says, like, God, we've got to do something about it. But the ratings for that Pro Bowl beat any other All Star game, and they're, you know, any other league would want that for just a regular season game, and it's dismissed by the NFL and by fans as being really insubstantial.
Yeah, no, it's not. The Pro Bowl is a great property. It's never going to end, and every single network that airs football would want it because it's going to win the night and it's going to win it big. You mentioned, and this is something that you reported last year when you talked to all the network executives who are part of the networks that air games, and their thoughts in terms of why viewership was up. Big stars drove the league, close games, of which there were many last year, and matchups matter. So my initial instinct, John, would be that I think, too, that the ratings will tick up this year, but I guess the only caveat I would say is last year there really were an extraordinary number of close, tight games, and a lot of that came early, which I thought sort of built the momentum up for the league.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're guessing on ratings for the season here in the beginning of August. I mean, so if they start out with a bunch of blowouts, if a bunch of their big stars get hurt, yeah, everything can go crazy. But one of the things that you didn't mention, and one of the reasons it's often cited by some executives as for why the ratings went up last year, is a competitive team in Chicago. When was the last time the Bears were competitive? And all of a sudden they you know, getting that entire market engaged. And once the market becomes engaged, it's not just Bears ratings that go up. It's the entire league that they start to take a look at. You had in L.A., even though there isn't a huge amount of support yet, but you had a team that went to the Super Bowl. So, like, in the second biggest TV market, you know, things are trending well. New York, we'll have to see, you know, but that probably isn't going to be good. But they're really significant markets that, when they do well on TV, it helps the ratings for the entire country.
Absolutely. So there are two teams I want to bring up, and you mentioned one of them, the Rams, obviously, who have you know, they're a great television team because of their offense. Los Angeles is still an odd market in terms of viewership. It never really delivers what the population is, but it's still the number two market in the country, and you're going to get a good population. John, I think one team is not, you know, the NFL ratings are not dependent on one team. But what I would say is, if the Browns have a good year, I think the NFL is going to have a good year. They're on primetime, I believe, four times. They have some of the most exciting players in football with Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry. And I think, and this is just sort of a theory that I've always had, there are far more Browns fans across the country than I think most NFL fans realize. It's a historic team. They've been dormant for a long time. But I think there are a lot of people, like, whose parents were Browns fans, and they may have passed that on to them in different cities. And if they ever get good, and I think they're going to be good this year, I think they're going to draw some pretty significant ratings.
Yeah, winning helps. But I'm going to push back a little bit. I don't think they need to be good. I just think that they need to be interesting. And right now, you mentioned Baker Mayfield, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., they're interesting. So if they are a spectacular failure this year on the field, there's still a storyline there that's going to almost be a must-watch. I mean, the worst thing that could happen to the Browns from a television standpoint is that they become boring.
Yeah, I'll tell you, John, a market that both of us know from our years of covering this stuff that is incredible when it comes to sports is Buffalo. It always sort of over-indexes its population base. And could you imagine if the Bills ever got good, what the numbers could be from that city, particularly like the local numbers?
Oh, boy, yeah. I mean, I do these ratings all the time for the Sabres. And you know better than I do off the top of my head. When's the last time the Sabres made the NHL playoffs even?
Yeah, it's been a while.
They're always one of the top two teams in terms of local TV ratings. The amount of support that Buffalo gives their hometown teams from a television standpoint is really... Yeah, it's really unique.
John, do you have any kind of sense as to how you think college football will do? The thing about college football that I think is always sort of tricky to figure out in terms of, you know, like, national interest. One, it's a very regional sport, of course, but, you know, it's very matchup driven in terms of the games that are going to, you know, certain games are going to draw well. Many of them involve Ohio State. Many of them involve Alabama. Many of them involve Michigan. But the one thing that the sport could use more of, and this is sort of just where we don't get four-year players anymore, is sort of continuity. You know, we don't always have a lot of, like, stars coming back, per se, to college football. So that's always a tricky one for me to figure out, you know, what will do well. Like, I know for sure Michigan, Ohio State is going to rock, and especially if the two teams are good. And Ohio State will always draw phenomenal viewership in its marquee games. But it's always hard for me in August, John, to get a real feel nationally of how college football will do in a given year. What about you?
Yeah, what's the Seinfeld line? You know, you always root for the laundry. I just think college football has these huge football brands, and the football brands go beyond the school. So it's more than like Alabama and Florida and LSU and Georgia. It's the SEC, and it's more than Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State. It's the Big Ten. And so I just think that there are these brands that, you know, the ratings can tick up or the ratings can tick down, but they're going to get a huge, outside of the NFL, they're going to blow away the ratings really for any other sport. But what I'm looking at in the college area is Fox is doing this new strategy where they're going to put their best college football game on at noon on Saturday.
Right.
And so part of the reason why they did that is there's too much competition for them in prime time, and there's too much competition sort of in late afternoon with good games. So what can happen with this now is from noon through prime time, you're going to get some really quality good games, whereas before in the noon time slot, you might have seen, you know, and not to disparage my own university, but Maryland, Minnesota, or some sort of game like that that you know only there would only be, you know, regional interest in. Now you're going to get really good games, and it's going to be curious to see whether that hurts ratings down the line later in the day because there's too much, or whether it just sort of helps build the ratings down the day. I just think it's going to be pretty neat to see.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think obviously it certainly will increase Fox's window early, 12-3. You do wonder though what kind of impact that has on the Fox late game. You know, depending on what the matchup is. That does bring me, John, to a story that you guys at Sports Business Daily and Journal have been all over, and that's the potential for 9 a.m. Eastern Time kickoffs in the Pac-12. Here's my sort of quick take on this. One, it's just outrageous to ask athletes, I think, to play in those games. Once again, the NCAA is an absolute fraud, and schools that claim these are student athletes, it's total BS. They're athletes / students, and that is what they are if you're asking college football players to play a 9 a.m. game, which means they're up at whatever, 6 a.m. and all that stuff. Two, I think it's outrageous to ask the student body to go to a 9 o'clock game on a Saturday after a Friday night. I mean, come on. I mean, that's just, you know, again, just ridiculous. Now, the reason the Pac-12, of course, is thinking about this is because of viewership and exposure. And here's my third reason I think it's a really bad idea. I don't necessarily buy, John, that if there's a good West Coast game, you know, let's say I'm making this up, USC-Stanford airing at 12 Eastern on Fox or somewhere else, do you think that, like, if you live in Wisconsin or Michigan or Ohio or Florida, like, you're going to switch your regional affiliation to watch that, you know, sort of, like, quality West Coast game? I don't know if I buy it. I get that the Pac-12 is struggling with their late night viewership and exposure, but I don't think it's a guarantee that the rest of the country is going to be interested in these games just because they're at 12 Eastern time kickoff. How do you see this?
Yeah, a part of me applauds Larry Scott for trying to think outside the box, but it's funny to talk about because it will never happen. So between the two of us, let's come up with the most marquee game, Pac-12 game. It would be what, USC, UCLA? I mean, could you imagine taking a game, maybe, or there might be others, but could you imagine taking that game, the most marquee game you have, and putting it locally in a window that's going to get the least amount of viewers and get the least amount of attendance? And it's something that is fun to talk about and fun to bandy about. There's almost no chance that's going to work. And it can only work if they do it. It would only work for the marquee games because Fox has already said we're only putting the best games on at noon Eastern time. So it's not like you can take sort of a mid-level Pac-12 game or one of the weaker Pac-12 games. Fox has no interest in that. It would have to be the best game coming out of the Pac-12, and I just can't see them doing that.
John, what are your thoughts on either Chris LaPlaca or Terry Hines doing a 9 a.m. conference call for sports media writers? Do you like that time, or do you want that later in the
day? That would be 6 a.m. for Terry Hines. So I don't see that happening either, Richard, for goodness sakes.
And you are very tight with Fox's communication chief, so you would have insight into that. But yeah, I mean, that if Terry Hines is doing a 6 a.m. Conference call with reporters from her Los Angeles palatial estate, that's dedication to Eric Shanks and the job. And, you know, I'm not sure that's – I mean, I know you probably like Fox, but that's maybe liking Fox too much, John, so I'm with you. Make those conference calls.
That only means that Eric Shanks is over, like, in Paris with the women's soccer team or something like that. That's an impossibility, Richard.
John, I realize this is a tangent, but let me just tell you something. I saw Jimmy Pitaro and Connor Schell in Toronto when the NBA Finals were taking place here in my new fine city. What a boondoggle this is for these executives. I realize they have, you know, they got to negotiate contracts and rights deals, and, you know, they got a lot of business to attend. But how great a gig is it when you could basically travel to any of these events, hobnob on the floor with all the movers and shakers, get to watch the game quick, and then take off? That, I mean, when you reach that level of sort of sports television executive, that is a, am I not correct, that is a boondoggle and a half.
My favorite is the people that go for Super Bowl week and then leave before the game when they have access to the Super Bowl. I mean, I would love to get to that position to where I'm actually leaving before the Super Bowl takes place. But
yeah, I'm with you.
Super, by the way, and Connor Schell, the NBA would have completely noticed had they stayed in Bristol, Connecticut. Like each of the leagues for their big championship games always take note of which executives show and which executives don't, and that matters when those rights fees come up and they start doing those deals. So it's a little more. There is a business case behind the boondoggle, but boy, yeah, that is a great perk of the job.
By the way, John, don't say anything about politics or race or social issues. I don't want to have to suspend you on this podcast.
Not going
to
do it. Not going to do it.
All right. But John, I will say this. You do make a great point because in all seriousness, part of their jobs are to absolutely interact with the league presidents and commissioners because that is the job per se. You're always trying to sort of set your network or company up to be a rights holder. The other thing, John, which I know for sure when these executive types land in one of these events, they do take it as an opportunity to meet their talent and to, if nothing else, hobnob with their top talent, tell their top talent they're doing well. And I think that's smart. That's good business. So if you're Jimmy Pitaro, you go over to Mike Breen, Mark Jackson, Doris Burke, Jeff Van Gundy, spend a little time with them, maybe grab a quick drink or something like that. That's, that is a part of this job as well, as to interact with your top talent. Let's be honest, to try to retain top talent.
Yeah, without question. I mean, there's so many different tentacles there, and it becomes sort of the roving, the roving office up there.
Yeah, John, again, if you ever come up to Toronto, you're welcome to stay at my abode. You don't have to even get a hotel, unlike Pitaro or Connor Schell. I'm happy to put you up on one of the rooms. You may have some, you may have some young kids basically waking you up very, very early. But otherwise, it'll be a nice day for you.
Do you give out Marriott points? Because I'd be happy to.
We'll get you some Tim Hortons Timbits. I don't know if we're getting Marriott points.
Deal done.
We'll work on that. All right, baseball. I think, by the way, if this is not your story, it's certainly your publication story, but you guys dropped not too long ago kind of a large-scale look at where the local baseball ratings were this year, and what you found was that some of the biggest markets, the bigger RSNs in baseball had dropped. Am I correct? That's you guys who did that, right?
Yeah, that was our story, and that's like, the Yankees, who are doing really well, are getting killed in the ratings on Yes Network, and the Red Sox, they're battling for a playoff position. They're getting pretty much destroyed in the local TV ratings. But what's always amazing to me, I mean, we mentioned Buffalo and the Sabres earlier. I was in Cleveland. Talk about a boondoggle. I went to the All-Star game in Cleveland, and just watching. And the All-Star game the year before was here in D.C. And in D.C., which isn't even that big of a town, kind of swallowed the All-Star game. It didn't have really a super big event feel here in D.C. In Cleveland, that entire city and that entire market just supported the All-Star game like I didn't see the year before. And I think that the people that I talked to say the same thing in St. Louis and the same thing in Kansas City. And there are these big Midwestern towns that just have such a fervency of support for not only their teams, but then when they host a crown jewel event for one of the leagues, they want to do right by their city and support it. And I just think it's something that's really unique, and it's something that I see every time I do pull out those local RSN ratings, because I think St. Louis has supported the Cardinals to such an extent that they've been in the top three for like the past at least 5 years, probably more than that. I mean, and it doesn't matter whether the Cardinals are doing well on the field or not. There's a fervency of support there that you don't get on either of the coasts. You certainly don't get in L.A., you don't get in D.C., and you're obviously not getting now in New York. I would think that you got it more in Boston, but, I mean, they're battling for the playoffs, and the team isn't resonating in Boston for some reason.
So, John, two of the big drops were Texas Rangers games on Fox Sports Southwest, and San Francisco Giants games on NBC Sports Bay Area. They were both down 30%, more than 30% when you guys did this report. in late July. Like, can that only be attributed to play on the field, or is it something deeper in those markets? But that, like, I can understand, like, occasionally if, like, teams are, like, really bad, you know, like, teams become like the Orioles or the, you know, or the Blue Jays, and both of us are living with that this year. Like, I get it. If you drop significantly, interest is going to go down. But, like, that is very curious to me. Because, you know, like, in the Giants' case, they're not good, but they're not bottom dwellers. But yet they've dropped precipitously. Rangers have dropped really, really big since 2012. Is this a larger problem for baseball, or just you'd have to dive deep into these individual markets to figure it out?
By the way, Richard, I do not want to get into politics with you, but I do want to say something nice about Baltimore, which is that team is on pace to lose more than 110 games. They're historically bad by Baltimore baseball standards, and ratings there have been generally flat. I think they're only down about 3%,
awesome,
which is amazing. It's always difficult to take. I mean, when you see 30%, it's something to pay attention to. But I really look more for, you know, the 2 or 3 year trend to see what's happening there. And you know Nielsen as well as I do. I always suspect that, like, when I see a rating go down that far, part of it's a play on the field, but part of it sometimes I think is like Nielsen swapped out a sports fan for a non-sports fan as part of their sample, you know, and sometimes that's the effect that happens there. But there could be a million reasons there. I would be careful about doing, like, because what we did was a half-season rating. Let's take a look at the full-season rating and then take a look at, like, you know, 2 or 3 years past or 2 or 3 years forward and check it out there. And I don't have those numbers at my fingertips.
Okay, so now let's go nationally really quick. So interestingly enough, Sunday Night Baseball, as we talk, is up. It's up because that last Red Sox-Yankee game that was on drew, like, a crazy amount of viewers. Maybe crazy is a little too strong. Drew a really healthy amount of viewers, and thus ESPN Sunday Night Baseball now is up 1% for the year. So much of this, of course, is matchup-driven, John. You get as many Red Sox-Yankee games as you can. I know they have a couple more left, so it's very possible Sunday Night Baseball, by the way, which I will say in terms of watchability is very hard to watch, in my humble opinion, it is going to be up. And so what do you make of that? What do you make of the fact that the national package, or at least the most prominent regular season national package, is going to be up this year?
I think that speaks well for baseball, and I think it speaks well for, you know, like you said, ESPN, I think they ended up with more Red Sox-Yankee games. And I know the rest of the country generally hates that, but it brings in good ratings. And so, you know, that generally helps. But the one thing that I always find interesting about TV ratings is I forget who played, and you can help me out here. There was a game that went 6 hours long, and it went into extra innings. It might have been a Red Sox-Yankee game, and the ratings for that were through the roof. I don't know one baseball fan that wants to sit through six and a half hours, even of a tight game, but the ratings suggest that more people do. So it's a, you know, baseball's trying to get younger. Baseball's trying to shorten the length of their games. But then by the same token, that big, long game probably brought in the highest ratings on Sunday Night Baseball this season. So it's a conundrum there that's interesting to look at.
Yeah, and again, if you are ESPN, you have to do as many Red Sox-Yankee games as you can. The historical numbers don't lie. I realize there are people who say there's too many Red Sox-Yankee games on, and I'm sure you're not wrong. If you're, like, you live in Chicago or L.A. or Miami, you are correct. But the reality is the viewership numbers are great for those matchups, and you'd be insane if you're a programmer, if you're ESPN, not to put that there, because it's going to guarantee you audience, which ultimately is going to guarantee you advertising revenue. I will say, though, John, I know you don't comment on this stuff as much as I do, but that baseball broadcast is very, very hard to listen to. The production is certainly high quality, so it's nothing about the director and the producer, but that broadcast is really set up essentially to be the Alex Rodriguez show. There's so much commentary, so much talk. In my opinion, they don't let the broadcast breathe, and it doesn't really work. Conversely, I think Chris Singleton and John Shambi are phenomenal as an ESPN radio broadcast. And to me, if I had my ideal druthers, they would be the main broadcast for ESPN. Now, they're not going to be as sexy as A-Rod, Mendoza, and Vasgersian, but they do a phenomenal job. If you've ever happened to listen to them on ESPN Radio, it's a really good broadcast.
I will say this. I see more complaints about that Sunday night baseball broadcast. I see it on social media, and I hear it from friends. So it is one that I would bet you that ESPN, after this season, does something to try to shake it up a little bit.
Hello, John. Ben Cafardo here. I heard your comments on the podcast about Sunday Night Baseball. All right, let's go to...
Ben, I was just agreeing with Richard, that's all.
Yes. Let's go... It'd be great if A-Rod called you. John Alex Rodriguez here. I'd like to come down to your office and chat.
I'm an Oriole fan. I'll take that one gladly, Richard.
I know, John. Hopefully one day the Orioles and the Blue Jays will rise again. I mean, we'll see. The Blue Jays got some...
Yeah, they'll always have 1989, right? The why not year.
Yeah, and a couple of good battles with Buck Showalter actually in the 2015s and 16s. All right, last topic here is the PGA Tour rights. I mean, this is your story. I feel like this is a John Oran special. You don't want McCarthy or Marchand or Ben Strauss or anybody touching this. This is Oran's taking this one from stretch to drive. So PGA Tour rights currently reside with CBS, NBC, and the Golf Channel. But, as you have done extensive reporting on, John, maybe this changes. And maybe the PGA Tour is thinking about some kind of interesting split rights. But here's the one that really gets interesting. Warner Media, according to your reporting, has told the PGA Tour that it would consider converting one of its existing TV channels, this is essentially the Turner world here with Warner Media, into a golf-focused one, but only if it winds up with the PGA Tour rights that are currently being negotiated. Those rights are up, or the next round of rights come up in 2021. Top line question, John. Where's all this stand right now? And what kind of odds do you put on the PGA Tour doing something dramatic in terms of where golf fans will see this after 2021?
Well, this is why this story is so fascinating to me, is because the rights aren't up until the end of 2021. The PGA Tour has decided that they're going right now and they're going to negotiate right now. So there's potential that they want to have a new deal in place by the end of this year, which means that there's potential that CBS and or NBC and or Golf Channel could be lame duck broadcasters for two full years, which is which you've rarely seen. Warner Media, as you said, are making a really big pitch. AT&T, which owns Warner Media, Randall Stephenson is on a bunch of sort of PGA Tour type boards, so that they have some inroads there. They're launching an HBO direct to consumer streaming service that they're going to want to put sports on, so they have a place for it there. ESPN, now that John Skipper is no longer with ESPN. They want to get back into the golf game, so they're kicking the tires, and they have ESPN Plus that they're trying to put a bunch of stuff on. PGA Tour is completely enamored and fascinated by Amazon because of the different digital packages that Amazon can do. I mean, imagine if you're a Brooks Koepka fan, you can pay potentially $5 a month and you can see every single shot that he has in every single tournament. So there are different ways that they can see packaging games if they go to a digital company like Amazon. But because they're going early, 2 years early, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to bet that they're not going to do anything overly unusual and that they're going to stick with their incumbents because I just can't imagine. Can you imagine 2 years? NBC is not going to be marketing those tournaments. They're not going to be spending money to produce those tournaments, as well as they would if they were going to be a long term partner. And I just can't see them making that move. So, but NBC and CBS will have to step up and pay. So that'll be interesting to see.
John, how would you view the PGA Tour as a kind of a property? It's obviously not the NFL, and it's not March Madness, and some of the other massive NBA, et cetera. But golf is interesting to me because, you know, there are times, especially when Tiger is playing well, that it's really has potential for phenomenal viewership. Then there are other weeks where it doesn't feel like sort of culturally of the moment. That said, I get it. There are always going to be millions of golf fans who are going to watch weekly. But like overall, do you where would you rank this property if you could, you know, sort of throughout the sports rights universe?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure where I would rank it, but I think it's great. I think that they're sitting pretty right now, and they're going to collect a huge increase in rights fee because of a couple of reasons. One is they just have so much content. They have all the PGA Tour events. They have the LPGA. They have the used to be called the Webgit.com Tour. They have the Senior, the Champions Tour. They have all this content that all these direct-to-consumer players want to have, and so that works out well. And if you dive down into the audience that watches golf, yes, it's a little bit old, but it's rich, and they have disposable income, and the advertisers want to reach those people. So it's I think that as far as a TV property, there's a reason that all these networks are circling trying to get these rights.
Yeah, major demos in terms of the cash demos that are very, very attractive to advertisers. All right, last one for me, John. I told you to get you out of here in about 35 minutes. We'll let you go. Something that really has been pretty impressive to me just in terms of the push from ESPN is the ESPN Plus push for Peyton's Places, the documentary series fronted by Peyton Manning. That I think Connor Schell told you is ESPN's most significant original content bet that they've done to date for ESPN Plus. They, to their credit, if you like this content, they have really like pushed that mainstream. And I would imagine if they are successful in terms of either getting people to sign up or whatever their proprietary numbers are on Plus for this series, I think we may see more of these, you know, kind of large scale bets where they throw down some serious money to try to do something on ESPN Plus that's really unique.
Yeah, and it gets them in with the athletes too. Like they did something there with LeBron James as well, and I think you know, Kobe Bryant I think had a series that went on that went on ESPN Plus.
Yes, he did.
So I think it works at it with that. But what really surprised me, what I'm most interested about with the Peyton's Place is, I always dismiss the idea of Peyton Manning being a Monday Night Football, you know, analyst. I didn't think he wanted to do it. I think there are other sort of higher profile areas that he could have gone. But Peyton Manning, now this is probably the third thing that he's done with ESPN over the past couple of years. So I mean, they've been establishing a relationship with this guy that, you know, let's speculate that ABC ends up with a primetime package. You know, could that entice Peyton Manning to do it? I think that, you know, ESPN is certainly setting the roads there for that to happen and developing that relationship.
That's a very, very, first of all, we should mention Kobe Bryant's show is Detail on ESPN Plus, but that is a really smart take, John. I totally agree with you that usually how these relationships happen, John, you know this as well as I do, how high-profile athletes get in the booth is it's all personal relationships. They interact with a president or vice president of a network. They get comfortable with these people. But the best way to do this, of course, is just to have a relationship with the athlete in terms of one of their pet projects. It would be the same thing with LeBron or Kobe or anybody else. I don't expect Peyton Manning to ever take the Monday Night Football job if it's on ESPN. But if ABC gets a rights package, my thinking changes. I'm with you
on
that.
This is the main reason, Richard, why you and I don't think Tony Romo is going to leave CBS. Like, even if somebody else offers more money, it's because, you know, he came in with these guys, he got comfortable with these guys, and he knows and likes these guys, you know? And,
yep.
And so it's a... That plays a large part in this.
All right, John, is there anything else we need to cover before I let you go? You got any vacation coming up to interesting places?
Bethany Beach, Delaware, going down the shore, hon.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
My baseball team is on pace to lose 110 games, so I have nothing to add to this, Richard. Sorry.
Yeah, Blue Jays getting healthy on the Orioles. By the way, watch out for the Blue Jays young players. Got a good young base of hitters. I know the pitching's gonna be is a mess, but Bichette, Guerrero, Gurriel, Jansen, they got an Biggio. They got an interesting team coming, I feel like, offensively in a couple of years. So, but almost as you know, beating the Yankees and the Red Sox in that division is just, you know, it is just hard as hell, basically.
It's tough. It is tough.
All right, John Orand is America's foremost something. What do you want to be America's foremost? Chef? Media reporter?
Oh, how about Orioles fan? I'll do that.
Orioles fan. All right. John Orand, in all seriousness, he is the media reporter for Sports Business Journal and Sports Business Daily. He also has the, if you are a subscriber to those publications, he puts out a newsletter with Michael Smith twice a week. That's really, really good. Gives John a chance to be a little more conversational in his writing, and it's great. Cannot recommend that more highly. I've really, really enjoyed that. John, thanks as always for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast. You will definitely be back again, probably around as we start to kick off the regular season for football, and continued success with your work. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, RD.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks, as always, to John Orand. Probably has been on this podcast about as much as anyone, with along with Jim Miller. And Ann Burke has been on this podcast a lot as well. Speaking of Jim Miller, if you're interested in previous editions of this podcast, James Andrew Miller and Jim Trotter, the week last week on Dan Le Batard and ESPN. Thank you for listening to that. The numbers on that were really, really good. So much appreciated. Before that, we had a boxing roundtable with Mike Coppinger and Lance Pugmire on how boxing is covered in 2019. So if you're a boxing fan, I think you'd find that interesting. For that, Conrad Thompson and Chris Herring. Chris Herring at 538. Conrad Thompson, of course, is the most successful wrestling podcaster in this country. And then before that, Bob Lee for a 50-minute exit interview on his life and times at ESPN. Please just head down the list of... The archives, we're approaching 70 episodes on this new version, the Post Sports Illustrated version. And, you know, if you're into this content, you should find something on there that you really, really like, and I hope at least. And so listen, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. That's essentially how this thing stays. Obviously, you know, I got to let Cadence 13 know that people are into it, and that's how you can – that's how they know. All right, so for Terrence Malagone, for everybody at Cadence 13, for their support, for all of you out there who've listened and supported this podcast, I thank you very much. And we will see you soon on the Sports Media with Richard Deitch podcast.